Approach anxiety is, again, having a weak social muscle. And you're going to be building up your social muscle so that it gets stronger over time so that you can approach a woman that you do not know, that you've never seen before in your entire life, that knows nothing about you, has no prior rapport built with you, and doesn't know any of the people that you know either, and you will be able to do that without fear. Now,
you know,
it's
really cool that you're talking about, you know, this sort of mentality. Like, you might not realize that you have a sort of weak social muscle because it seems like you have a very active social life. Because, like, if you have friends constantly being introduced into your sphere, you know, you're being introduced to people. Mm-hmm. I was just recently telling somebody about, like, this is how I found your material, because I had this experience where I was in college, you know, so there's always like activity. There's always social activity there for the taking in college. You know, you're just surrounded by it. You have to try really hard not to make friends in college, right?
And, well, I somehow did that. I somehow pulled that one off, I guess.
Well,
when I was in college.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it definitely can happen. But it was when I moved to a different state for the summer, away from school. I went out to Colorado with just one friend. And that was when I realized that I didn't know how to meet people. Like, I had to realize that I didn't even have a social muscle, basically. I realized that all of my social interactions had depended on being in an environment that basically handed them to me, whether it was being in high school, college, or another common one is if you go on a lot of, like, trips, you know, like vacations or mm-hmm. like little learning experiences or camps or anything like that, you have this like prepackaged, you know, fertile social environment where, again, you have to try really hard not to meet people because everybody's looking to make connections and stuff like that. So it was when I moved to this other state, you know, completely away from all of my friends and family, and I only had one friend with me, that I realized I had no idea how to make friends even, but I definitely had no idea how to meet women. And that's where I started this whole journey, you know, like finding your material and everything. And that's like you said, it's really, that was my awakening point when I realized I really had no idea how to even start meeting women, you know?
Right. Now, the interesting thing about that process is that we don't realize in the moment that this is a social muscle issue. Instead, we begin to blame ourselves and isolate ourselves. And what does that do? Well, that obviously further compounds the problem of having a weak social muscle. So instead of seeing this as going, oh, you know, for example, if I ask you to lift a 300-pound weight off the ground and you go to pick it up and you can't do it, well, you don't go, oh my God, you know, I suck. I mean, maybe you'll be like, oh, I'm weak, right? That's true. Mm-hmm. But you don't assign something to you that says you're going to be that way forever. You know, you'll go, well, this is something that I need to work on immediately. And then you can start out smaller, and then you work your way up, and then you get stronger, and eventually you can lift that 300-pound weight, and then you see the progress. Well, social muscles are not something that we have gyms for. You know, we don't have like a membership to your gym that says, okay, the social muscle gym, come here and talk to random people for 20 minutes, you know, and work that up. And that's not socially acceptable yet, to where people are like, okay, well, not the rest of the world. The rest of the world does not realize that this is what the case is, that we actually have a social muscle to build up. So what ends up happening is we end up blaming ourselves for it, isolating ourselves, and then attempting to prove ourselves wrong in intermittent experiences. And that goes horribly wrong because you may say, you know what, I'm going to go out tonight and I'm going to meet 10 people, right? And I haven't talked to someone in 2 months. I really like met new girls. Tonight I'm going to go out and meet 10 people. I'm going to be the life of the party. And you're like, you set these amazingly crazy expectations for yourself. You walk out, you walk up to one girl, you go, hey, how are you? And you say it in such an awkward way because you have not talked to people in a while, like haven't talked to girls in a while, especially girls you don't know or you don't have any introduction for. And she is having her own issues in her head, like someone's coming up and talking to her, and she doesn't know if you're going to be valuable or not. So she throws out a test just to see if you're actually a confident guy, and you fail it. And then that just proves to yourself that you can't do this, and then you go back home and you pout and you have another 2 month stint, and then you come out again, try it again, you fail, right? So this is a cycle that I
felt very closely relate to that, that story, by the way.
I think that everyone can, you know, because it's we all fall for this, and I would blame myself forever. When I used to live in Tallahassee, this was like the beginning of my realizing that I really was socially awkward. Because again, like in high school, we have these, we're forced to be at least a little bit social. Even if you try to run away, you're going to run into somebody. You know, there's people everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I had some friends, but I was just kind of quiet, and I did hide from the idea, hid from everybody, and just kind of said, well, I'll have friends and then girls will come find me, right? And that was really what I wanted to do. And I started changing my entire life to appeal to the idea that I wanted women to come talk to me instead of me talking to them. And I tried a whole bunch of shit and it never worked. You know, it just would fail every time. So for me, it was really about realizing that this is a social muscle that I have to build up. And when I figured out how to do it, which I'll reveal in this call, I sort of had this epiphany where I became almost, not really overnight, but almost overnight, maybe about a week it took me of doing this, I became the other side of the coin of myself. I became the extroverted, talkative, carefree, and fearless part of myself around women. And the only way to do it was to sacrifice a week of failure and be okay with it, right? So I want to get into a little bit about what I did and what you guys can do too to get over this and to really, you know, just sort of beat this approach anxiety thing, and so that the next time you go to a place where you don't know anybody, it's sort of second nature. But first, I'd really like to get into what's behind it all and why it is that you do have approach anxiety in the first place, why it is that sort of what's the mechanism or the core of everything when it comes to your approach anxiety. What I found is I thought that, you know, first I could just go out and approach a bunch of women and talk to them and whatever, and eventually my approach anxiety would go away. And that did happen. But I realized there was one step I had to take right before my approach anxiety went away, and that was what I'm going to talk about right now. Something that if I had done this first, it would have taken me a day or two to get this knocked out. But instead, I did it last, and it took me a month, you know, to really get over my approach anxiety. You know, after a week, I was starting to feel like I was in a pretty good pocket. You know, I was really going out, everything's okay. But to truly let it myself get over the approach anxiety and to where it didn't have a grip on me, it took me a while to figure out what I had to do. And what that really all boiled down to is something that's not so magical and exciting. It's not some, you know, special kind of cologne that you wear that makes women run up to you and, you know, cross their legs and, you know, touch you a bunch and smile and laugh. It's not some magical line that you say that every woman falls for. You know, if it was, then I probably wouldn't respect women very much if they all fell for the same line. I mean, that'd be kind of silly, you know. One of the reasons why a lot of comics, comedians, begin to resent their audience and begin to start this downward spiral of like alcoholism or drug abuse, things like this, is because they disrespect them because they fall for the same jokes over and over again. I mean, they just go to a new city or a new venue, say the same exact jokes in a row, and they get the exact same reactions from different people. And they started, eventually a lot of comedians begin to disrespect their audience, like lose respect for their audience because they feel like everybody's stupid, right? You know, they keep saying the same joke over and over, and everyone keeps laughing at it like it's amazing and new. They're easy to deceive, you know? So I wouldn't like that if that was the case, and you probably wouldn't either if every woman fell for the same line. So what's really at the core of all of it is the belief that you are not the kind of guy that talks to anybody he's curious about. This is very important, and this is something that's worth writing down. So if you have a pen, or if you have a needle and you want to write this in blood, you can do that too. Just don't lose too much. Just use a tiny bit. What you want to write down is the core of all approach anxiety is a belief that you're not social. That is the core of all approach anxiety. That you're actually not the kind of guy who walks up and talks to women that he doesn't know, that introduces himself to guys in a bar, that likes to have a good time regardless of whether or not he fits in. You know, all these qualities that you might attribute to or contribute to being really good with women already, you know, or like something that you see when guys are actually good. You see these qualities. You think that they actually have these qualities. That's why they're good. That's not the case. The case is that they're good because they create these qualities, because they've worked this up, you know. The qualities that you see that they actually let out, they have further dived into, sort of like built up, because they started seeing success from doing it in the first place. So they kept doing it, and eventually they built up their social muscles. So all you have to do, you know, let's say you're introverted and you're not really sure if this is going to work for you. You know, I have a harder time than most guys. I can tell you right now that I was worse than anybody I've ever taught or met. I know that might sound crazy, but I was dating a girl in North Carolina, or no, was it North Carolina? It was in Tallahassee at the time, actually, still. And she left to go hang out with somebody, and she didn't call me back when she said she was going to. So I called her 15 or 20 times in a row and cried on my messages. Like, one message would be like me going, "Hey, where are you? I'm worried about you." Next message would be like, "All right, fine. You know what? Don't even worry about coming back. I'm not even going to be here." And it's like, beep. Next message. "I'm so sorry. You know, please, exactly. Please forgive me. Like, come back."
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly like in Swingers.
Exactly. Except I did it for way, 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 way longer, you know? And it was so pathetic, you know? And I just kept doing it. And then I kept digging the hole deeper and deeper and deeper. And like, that was me dating somebody. That was me actually in a relationship. Like, before that, I was worse than this, you know? I just had no idea what I was doing with women at all. And if I can overcome this, then I know that you can. I'm going to tell you what took me from worse than wherever you are now, no matter who you are, worse than wherever you are now, to get to at least closer to where I am and to where Brad is, and other people who, like Brett, is a DAO ambassador, and people like us, who have sort of practiced this for a while and have seen a lot of results from it and know that we can trust it now. So that belief, again, is that you're not the kind of guy who talks to people that you're curious about, that approaches random women he's attracted to, things like that. So what you want to do first, in the DAO of Badass, there's a section on creating a belief system. And beliefs are, I mean, this is like the holy grail of this program. Now, one of the cool things about this part of the program is that you can actually use that process that I outlined in the DAO of Badass to create any belief you want, and that belief will then create a reality. Meaning that before someone gets really, really, really rich, before someone becomes a multi-multi-millionaire, they believe that they are the kind of guy who becomes a multi-millionaire. That belief has to be there first. If the belief isn't there first, then you never let yourself get good with money, right? So I have a system in the DAO of Badass that allows you to create and install a belief. Now, this isn't something that I invented. I discovered it. I didn't invent it. No one taught it to me, but I discovered it by breaking apart what actually worked whenever I was talking to people about creating belief systems. And I actually went through my own belief systems and how I was able to create a belief system sort of on the fly. And I broke that down and ended up with this process. Now, you can use that for whatever you want. In the DAO of Badass specifically, I ask you to use it first to create a belief that you're hot. Because this will make things very, very easy for you moving forward. If you don't have that belief that you're hot, you have to prove to everyone, including yourself, that you're hot. And that really doesn't work very well. It takes a lot longer to do that than it would just to believe that you're hot first. So instead of doing that, I said, go through this process. It's a 5-step process, really simple. Go through this 5-step process, and at the end of it, you will believe that you're hot, and immediately your world will start to fall in line with that. You'll start to see other women thinking that you're hot, and it's like just magic. It's amazing. If there was going to be a magic pill, this would be it. This is like the magic bullet, the thing that bypasses everything, you know, and gets cut straight to the responses that you really want. You can use this for anything, though. You can create a belief that you are rich, or that you're the kind of guy that's going to be rich when you get, you know, in a couple of years, or you know, you belong to that group of multimillionaires. And you can use it for whatever you'd really like. I've used it for several things in my life. The first thing, of course, was that I was attractive, that I was hot. But the second thing that I used it for is what helped me get over my approach anxiety. And I used it, unfortunately, I used it a little bit later than I should have. If I had done it earlier, like I said, it would have been very, very quick. So I implore you to use this earlier and not wait till later on to believe this in yourself. So I'll kind of go through the process real quick with you guys, and you can practice it tonight. You can get past the second stage tonight, and then you can get through the third and fourth stages over the next couple of days. And this will be infinitely helpful for you. And by the next call we have, if you do this, my guarantee is that by the next call we have, which is in a couple of weeks, I believe, actually, just make sure. So it'll be on the 29th of December, so right after Christmas. By the next call, you will have overcome your approach anxiety. You will not be scared when you see a girl that you don't know dressed up like crazy sexy at a bar. You'll be able to walk up to her and talk to her. So this is my promise to you. If you do this, it will work. If you don't do it, or you try to half-ass it, it won't work. So please take notes and pay attention. The first thing you got to do is challenge the current belief that you have. The current belief is that you're not that kind of guy, right? That you don't go talk to the women that you don't know, that you don't approach women that you're, or anybody that you're curious about. Now, the belief that you're going to install here is going to be as follows. It will be, I am the kind of guy that talks to anyone that I'm interested in. I'm the kind of guy who talks to anyone that I'm interested in. Write that down. If you haven't written it down yet, I'm going to say it one more time. I'm the kind of guy who talks to anybody that I'm interested in. Okay? So this is going to be very, very important. Soon your actions will reflect this this sort of statement. But for now, just remember this, right? That's the belief that you're going to install here into your brain. You're going to sort of download that into your brain, and it should automatically work. It's sort of plug and play with how our brains work. But the first thing you got to do before you can really accept that is you have to challenge your current belief that that belief is going to take the place of, right? So right now you've got this like space. It's kind of like a parking spot in your mind. And this parking spot has a car in it. Granted, it's an old, shitty, horrible looking Pinto, right? I mean, it's just, no offense if anyone has a Pinto in this car, but it's an old, shitty car. I mean, it's not even worth, I mean, if you drive it to a junkyard, it's going to cost you more money to get it there than you'll get from the car. I mean, it is totaled. It's terrible. It's just like on blocks and it won't go anywhere, right? So it's a deficit. It's not helping you in this parking lot. Now, this new belief is like a Ferrari, and you're going to want to park that Ferrari in this spot, but right now you got to get rid of this old belief, right? You got to move it out of the way. You have to make room for this new badass turbocharged belief system that you're creating now. The old belief, though, is a belief that you've had since you were a little kid. And when you were a little kid, it was smart. Because as a kid, when you talk to people you don't know, what do you hear? Don't talk to strangers. Right? Don't talk to strangers. You don't know who they are. Just don't talk to strangers and you'll be safe. Right? Because kids, as kids, we'll talk to anybody. We don't care. We're just like, hello, who are you? I'm over here. Oh, candy? Okay. Right? We don't want that, right? That's what we tell, you know, we're told as kids, don't talk to strangers, you know, keep yourself, you know, stay near me, that kind of thing. That's for safety. Now, as we've gotten older, we have this old belief there that says it's weird. It's not that it's wrong to talk to strangers now, it's just that it's not normal to talk to people we don't know. You know, we have this sudden stranger danger concept in our head, you know, like this, don't go talk to them, right? And there's nothing wrong with learning that as a kid and thinking that as a kid, but as you get older, that's no longer a belief that you need. Once you become able to protect yourself, that belief is now out of date. But instead of revisiting that belief system, we instead leave it for decades. Decades. And this is not your fault. You know, you've been sort of led to believe this most of your life. It's not your fault. And you've sort of bought into it because it made sense at some point. But it is your responsibility now that you know. Now that you know that is, it's something that you have to work on, you have to overcome. It is your responsibility. So the real question I ask myself when I'm trying to challenge my current belief is that true 100% of the time? Have I never in my life ever, ever talked to someone that I was interested in? And the answer is almost exclusively, well, no, not 100% of the time, right? But the truth is that we don't know what percent of the time it is that it is true or isn't, because we have this filter that only shows us beliefs or shows us things that support our current belief system. So the truth is now that you know that's not true, you'll never know what the actual percentage is, right? You'll never be able to look at yourself and go, Well, actually, 20% of the time I'm that guy, and then 80% of the time I'm this new guy, right? You won't know because your brain's going to filter out everything. That's just how we work. So that means that at best, your most accurate way of your most accurate percentage is going to be around 50%, right? It's about 50% of a chance that you are the kind of guy that doesn't talk to anybody interesting that you're interested in. It's about 50% of a chance that you are the kind of guy who's going to, who talks to people that he's interested in. So this is a very interesting place to be. Once you realize that that belief is not necessarily true, you now free yourself up to make a very important decision. And that is, which of these beliefs do you want? Which one will help you more, right? Once you make a decision from that, you then push forward to the rest of this process. If you think that the belief that you do not talk to people that you're interested in, if you think that that's better, then you should probably hang up, to be honest, because this isn't going to help you at all. Then you probably have no problems whatsoever, and you got no issue, you're good, right? You're just going to be happy not talking to anybody, period. You're going to have weak social muscle forever, but it's probably not you. I mean, I'm guessing that 100% of the guys on this call who listen to this, either listening to this recording now, if it's a recording, or who are live on this call right now, 100% of those guys, I think we just lost somebody, by the way. I think somebody just dropped off the call. Hopefully it wasn't for that reason.
Yeah.
I'd say 100% of the guys that are on this call, though, they just pop back on now, okay? are actually here because they want to overcome this. So that takes us to the next step. And that next step is accepting your new belief, right? So let's say the new belief is that you're the kind of guy who, like I said, you're the kind of guy that approaches and talks to anybody that you're interested in. And that's your new belief. So what you have to do first, and the reason why, by the way, I chose this belief is because this is what I actually came to that helped me overcome my approach anxiety. When I finally was able to say this out loud and get feedback from people, and it was all cool, that got me over my approach anxiety, right? So this is what I want you to do too. I want you to install this belief for yourself as well. So that what I want you to do first is you have to believe it yourself first. 99% of guys will attempt to skip this step. Do not attempt to skip this step. It might seem kind of like, you know, woo-woo. It might seem kind of silly. You might feel like you're wasting your time. You're lying to yourself. Whatever it is. You know, it might seem like it's a fantasy. Whatever. You have to go through this process. You have to. And I'll tell you why. If you don't accept that belief for yourself first, you will never be able to see the actual feedback you get from other people later on. So you'll never fully believe it. And that means that you'll constantly actually have approach anxiety. It'll never go away, right? So I don't want that for you. I want you to actually attack this, get through it, get out the other side. So instead of skipping this stage, what I want you to do, and it's a very easy way of doing this, all you have to do is stand in front of your mirror in the bathroom. Just do it tonight, you know, before you go to bed, and just stand in front of the mirror and go, and just repeat this over and over again. I'm the kind of guy that talks to anybody he's interested in. That's it, right? And you want to keep saying that over and over again. In the beginning, the first time you say it, it's going to feel like such a lie to you. You're going to feel like, this is just silly. Everything in your body is going to say, stop doing this. You look retarded. You know, you look, this is pathetic, whatever. Your body will try to stop you. And the reason why it tries to is because your brain, your subconscious mind has to know for sure that this new belief is worth the extra effort, because it's a lot of mental energy to create a new neural pathway, right? That says, this is the new go-to now, not the old one, right? The old one served you your whole life. If it was that easy to create a new belief system and your brain didn't challenge you and make you feel weird for doing it, then you'd be the most gullible guy in the world. You'd have all these beliefs that don't help you, and eventually you'd have a belief that kills you, right? So it's a survival mechanism, right? And this is what we have to sort of overcome. So as you say it in the mirror, just say it in the beginning, maybe the first 10 times you say it, it's going to feel like a lie, right? You may even find yourself shaking your head no and exhaling like, no, like this isn't right, you know? That's good.
Or like smiling at yourself or like kind of like
trying to break tension.
That's what I experienced. Yeah, like I would like kind of laugh at myself or something and be like, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly, right? So it seems really silly, exactly. You know, and this is good. This means that you are actually currently challenging the belief that you had before. You're like you're hooking that old Pinto up to a tow truck right now. You know, it's like being lifted up on the bed of this truck, and your body's, everything's trying to fight. No, no, don't move that. You don't need to do that. You can park the Ferrari somewhere else, you know, or you don't need a Ferrari. You know, this is perfectly fine. Gets you where you need to go, whatever. So you're going to fight that urge and you're going to continue. And as you say it, eventually you're going to come to a place where it seems almost neutral. It's not true and it's not false, right? As soon as you get to this place where it doesn't feel like a lie anymore, but it's not necessarily true either, you're going to add one thing on the end of that sentence. And that is, you're going to say, I'm the kind of guy who talks to everybody he's interested in, and that's just the way it is. And that's just the way it is the end of the sentence. Tack that onto the end. When you add this, and that's just the way it is statement to the end of your sentence, you begin to take it out of your own control. Your subconscious mind goes, oh, this is something that actually is, and it's not you doing this, right? Even though, you know consciously that's not true, that you're actually creating this, your subconscious mind won't be able to tell the difference. So you say, and that's just the way it is. And then as soon as you start to do that, you'll start to feel different immediately. I mean, I'm talking moments after you do this. You'll start to feel confident and excited, kind of happy, right? You're like, because the prospect that you just created a new belief system in a matter of 5 minutes is overwhelmingly positive. I mean, like, that's just like a dream come true, right? Well, you sort of have. You've begun to, and you believe it now. But now what you need is something a little bit more, right? And this next step is crucial. And most people, you know, if you've ever heard, like, the Secret or, you know, the Laws of Attraction, that kind of stuff, some people may find that that works really well for them. Some people probably find, though, that it's not, it makes you feel good, and then it doesn't work, right? You say it a bunch, you know, sort of feel good, and then all of a sudden it stops working and you get evidence to the contrary and you're like, oh, this is such, I'm lying to myself, it's such a bunch of bullshit, right? The truth is, the laws of attraction are incomplete. The Secret, you know, the book The Secret, is kind of incomplete. And that is because it doesn't take into account the next three stages of belief creation. And I'm going to go over those right now with you, just briefly. And these are crucial, crucial elements. And I'll sort of talk to you about them in a bit here, and we can, Brad, if you have any questions or anything you want to add to it, please do. So, the next step in this process, once you start to feel like that warm and fuzzy feeling, and you're like, you know what, I am the kind of guy that talks to anybody that he's curious about or interested in, and that's just the way it is. That I am, that's it, that's true, that's just absolutely true, right? Start to feel that way. Okay, cool, right? Next thing you have to do is proclaim this. So the next step is proclamation. So you have to actually say this out loud in a normal setting, in a normal social environment, and you have to be comfortable doing it. Now, I'll tell you one thing. For myself, it was the scariest shit in the universe to bring this up in conversation, right? Because I was like, what if they notice that this isn't really true? What if they laugh at me? What if they don't accept it? What if they find out that I'm lying to myself? Everyone's going to think that this is foolish. Like, I had all these serious fears around it, you know? And this is the last bit of approach anxiety that you will ever have, is this last bit where you're about to proclaim it to the people that are around you, that you're just that kind of guy. So, you know, push through it. I just got to say the only way around that is to really just, like, you know, bite the bullet and go for it. You know, you got to commit 100%. Tap into that part of you that really believes this is true, right? And then just say it. Now, what you'll find is a very interesting response from these people. The step after proclamation, just saying it out loud, is one step. The next step after that is feedback. This is where you actually get responses back from the people that you're talking to, that you say this to. If you say this in normal conversation, in a way that you, in the same way that you might say, oh, I drive a gray car, right? Or, I know how to speak English, which most people in this call do, I hope. You know, I know how to speak English. That's the truth. That's the fact, right? You can prove it. You can sit here. You can speak English. You can say things, and someone who knows English will understand it, right? You know that. Well, you want to say this new belief in a way that is just as nonchalant as that, just as, you know, matter of fact as the fact that you speak English. You know how to speak English. And if you can do this, you begin then to see the results of this belief for the first time. Because right after you get feedback that is in alignment with your a belief that you've accepted. So let's say that I said, you know, this. When you go out and you say to somebody, "Oh, I talk to people that I'm interested in. It's just who I am," you know. And you say that the first time you say this, and you get a reaction that someone goes, "Oh, okay," and that's it, and they don't doubt it for a second. You are free from approach anxiety because the next step is called submission. And that's where your subconscious mind stops fighting this belief and begins to create all of the necessary neural pathways that make it true in your life. Now, you have to be careful, obviously, because you can't say something like, my classic example is, "I am a flying donkey," right? "I am a flying donkey" is a belief that unless you are a flying donkey, and for somehow you're on this call, I can see why you might have a problem with women if you're a flying donkey, but if you're not a flying donkey, you're going to get feedback to the contrary, right? You're going to get people going, "What do you mean you're a flying donkey? It doesn't make any sense. You don't look like one. You're a human. You're talking to me. You don't have wings and a tail and, you know, where parts of you may look like a donkey. You may be well endowed enough. but, you know, that doesn't mean you're a flying donkey." So you'll get this response back that says, no. This is not true, man. This is not true about you. You're lying to yourself. And in society, we are built to do this to each other to keep us alive, right? To keep us from changing beliefs to something that will make us an outcast, you know? So instead of just going at it and not getting feedback, you actually have to get the feedback. So you have to say something, use your belief and your belief system that you know is going to have a good chance of being accepted. And I know that the way I worded that was specifically perfect for this, because no one can argue with the idea that you are the kind of guy who talks to people he's interested in. Nobody can argue that. Even if they've known you for 10 years, they cannot argue that, because you could very well have been that guy forever. You just haven't been interested in anybody, right? And that's really easy to argue. So everyone in your life will accept this, right? They will go, "Oh yeah, you know, that makes sense." And they'll go, they might even say, "So do I," you know, and just as a way to build rapport with you. So as soon as you get that feedback and you submit that belief, you're done. Now all you have to do is keep that belief in the forefront of your mind. Work it out. Make sure that you keep doing it to make sure that it's true for you, so you don't start doubting it yourself. In the beginning, you're going to have a lot more fickle of a belief system than you will later on. Later on, it'll be so solid that it'll take an overwhelming amount of evidence to the contrary to prove to you that maybe that belief isn't true. So from this place, you begin to talk to people that you're curious about, right? As soon as you start to believe it yourself, you then go out, you say it, you get feedback, that evidence all connects together, you submit your belief, the end, right? Next step is maintaining the belief. You have to maintain this belief. You have to constantly, in your life, make this true for yourself. Otherwise, it will begin to slip outside of your reality again, and you'll have to. It's kind of like you'll pull that Ferrari out and, you know, pull it out for a little test spin, come back, and there'll be another Pinto there, right? You won't be able to park it again. You're going to have to get rid of it again. You're going to have to get rid of that old belief again. So anytime that happens, you have to go through this process, remind yourself, submit the belief. It can take moments, you know, if you're doing it again. So the first time it takes a little bit more time, maybe a day to do it, feedback, that kind of thing. The second time you do it, though, to maintain it, if something goes wrong, it'll take literally 20 minutes. And then you're done. You know, you're back to normal again. You're good to go. And this can stick with you for, you know, for 10 years. You can have this belief one time and then not do it for 10 years and lose it completely. Come back to it 10 years and then spend 20 minutes on it. Good to go. Right? So this is one of those abilities that, even as your approach anxiety comes back because you don't maintain this, if you let it slip, you can immediately turn it around, and in 20 minutes, now you're back on top, right? So let's talk a little bit about how to get this belief worked out in your mind, how to exercise this belief, and how to make sure it stays solid in your mind all the time, right? Because at the end of the day, you can't approach women with the idea in mind that you have to prove to yourself that you can do it. Instead, you want to approach to prove to yourself that this is what you normally do, right? Not that you can, but that this is normal and this is you, right? You have to do it because it's normally you. This is who you really are. If you don't do it, you don't approach, you feel kind of weird, right? You feel like this isn't really who you are. And that's really what you're going for. So, at the end of the day, let's sort of talk a little bit about this process that you can go through to build, to solidify this belief so that it is 100% true for you all the time, right? And that you keep this approach anxiety gone. I remember the moment where I realized that this is probable and possible, and then eventually the moment I realized that it was working. I was in, this time I was in North Carolina, and I was going to a bar, and I had been to probably 12 bars that week. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but I was in the middle of my biggest revelation of my life, which was discovering the patterns behind what actually creates attraction, right? This system that you've been learning from me from day one. And I was going to a ton of bars because in my mind, going to a bar is like going into the Shaolin temple of meeting women. I mean, it is like the hardest place ever to meet women is in a bar. I mean, hands down. You know, you get into this bar, a bunch of people you don't know, a bunch of girls that are guarded, all these guys are getting drunk, they're competing with you, there's all this pressure to go talk to people, and everyone's trying to have a good time or pretending like they are, and most people are not, right? So it's not a very conducive environment to meet women, which is why I started there, because if I was going to master something, I needed to make sure that I was in the temple, you know, the mastery level temple. And so I started at bars and clubs and things like that, and it was really difficult in the beginning. And so I was going to a ton of bars, and I remember the moment I walked in. I didn't realize this happened until I was already working. I walked in, and I saw a girl that was standing there. She was very, very attractive, and I walked straight up to her, and I said, "You're looking really sexy. I should probably talk to you before I go flirt with everybody else," you know? And so I didn't even think about what I was saying. It just fell out of my mouth. I didn't even think about it. As soon as I said it, I was like, "Oh my God, what did I just do?" Right? I was like, I should be nervous right now. I should be scared. I actually got scared after I said it because I was like, oh my God, what if, you know, this doesn't work, you know? And she immediately started laughing and I was like, oh my God, that was pretty ballsy of you to come up here and say that. I was like, oh, you know, I'm just that kind of guy, right? And immediately, bam, no problem with approach anxiety since. You know, and if I did have a problem, it was 20 minutes away from being solved, you know? So that moment for me was massive, massive. But I had been going out to bars like, you know, for the past 6 nights I had gone in 12 bars, you know, and that was like the 12th one that I'd gone to, and I saw this girl and I just did it, right? I did it backwards. I did it the long way. I don't think you should do that. I think you should submit the belief first and then go back and prove it to yourself afterwards. So let's talk for a second a little bit about the difference between having an internal versus external frame on this call, because that's going to massively affect your approach anxiety level, right? So so let me just talk about what internal and external frame means. So there are two, this is called a metatype. Metatypes sort of overarch your entire personality type. And there are two types for these different frames, right? One is called an internal frame, one's called an external frame. People who have an internal frame are people who get...
I wish I knew more... like stand-up jokes. Those would be...
I'm going to go
learn some one-liners for these awkward...
Exactly. And then she says, if I get back on and I hear you with the punchline of a joke, I'm going to be disappointed, though, that I missed the rest of it. So that wouldn't be good. Let me see here. Okay, so whenever I was sort of at that stage where I was approaching a bunch and I sort of did it backwards... But when I finally went up to that girl and I talked to her and I said, you know, okay, this is just who I am. I'm just that kind of guy. And she accepted it and she laughed and she thought it was cool. That's when I finally submitted it, right? So what I want you to do after you accept this belief yourself and you begin to proclaim it, it literally was me walking up to a girl I'd never talked to before. And then when she was like, that's kind of strange or ballsy that you walked over here and talked to me, that's whenever I was like, well, it's just kind of the guy that I am, and then it's submitted. Now, like I was talking about before, if you have an internal external frame, I want to talk to you about what the difference is and how you can tell which one you are. So guys who have an internal frame get feedback from themselves. Like they, best way to figure this out is to say, when you've done a good job, how do you know? Is it because you look at it and you go, that's a good job? Or because you look at it and you go, that's a good job, but let me run it by somebody first and see what they think, right? If you're in the latter, the external frame group, then that means that you're going to have a lot more approach anxiety than guys who have an internal frame. If you look at something and you're like, this is good, you know, I know this is good, I don't need your feedback, then you have an internal frame. And that means that you don't need the feedback of society to submit a belief. All you need is to accept that belief yourself, right? And these guys are guys who don't have very much, if any, approach anxiety. We have one on the line here. In a moment, I'm going to unmute Lance. Not yet, Lance, but in a minute I will. And I'll sort of have you talk a little bit about your experiences being in having an internal frame. And I have an external frame. Brad has an external frame. And most guys have an external frame, which is why we experience approach anxiety in the first place. So if you look at something and you go, I think I've done a good job, but let me run it by somebody first to get confirmation. You have an external frame. If you look at something and you're like, I did a good job and I don't care what you think about this or what anyone says about this, then you have an internal frame. Now let me tell you where these things have pros and cons. Having an external frame, the con part, the bad part of having an external frame is obviously that you can be needy. Because you need feedback. You need other people to like you. You need other people to say you did a good job. You know, you need this sort of like positive reinforcement, right? Now the pro part, the good part of this, is that when it comes time to be crucially involved in getting feedback from other people, i.e. in rapport, for example, in rapport, people who have an external frame rock it. They're amazing at it because they can connect because they're getting information from the person they're talking to constantly. They're constantly getting feedback from the person they're talking to. So this makes people who have an external frame very good at rapport, but very bad at approach in the first place. And sometimes very bad at attraction. Now you can work that up and you can get better at it, no problem, right? Now, guys who have an internal frame, like Lance, well, I'm going to unmute in just a moment. Guys who have an internal frame are very good at approaching. They feel little to absolutely no approach anxiety at all. But when it comes time to connect during rapport, they can't get the feedback from the woman very easily. And so they have a harder time not just plowing over the girl, right? She'll say something and they'll just plow over, right? And this is a constant struggle for the guys who have an internal frame. Now, if you do have an internal frame and you want to create that belief that you're the kind of person that is sincere, whatever, that really helps you get built in rapport, I absolutely condone you doing that. You're just going to have a different game than the guys who have an external frame. If you do have an internal frame, you're going to be focusing a whole lot more into reading body language and trying to change your behavior based on that body language. So that's going to be your game, right? So again, if you answered, I know it's a good job by looking at it, if anybody else says that it's a bad job, they're probably wrong, right? You'll know because you've probably never experienced approach anxiety in your life. You probably have no fear. Now, every guy who's hearing this right now is probably like thinking, well, shit, man, how do I just get an internal frame? You know, that sounds a lot nicer. Well, you're born with your frame. So if you, and you really need to support, like really believe in it because your frame, because you have almost all your power is built in your frame, right? So all your personal power is in your frame. You just work on the one that you have a deficit on that isn't really built up yet. Work on the parts, the weaknesses of that, but keep the strengths of your frame because you have a superpower that allows you to do certain things because of it. And if you tap into that, it's just untouchable and you just rock it so amazingly. I have an external frame and I've been able to overcome approach anxiety. You know, so you can't have an internal frame if you have an external frame. If you try to pretend like you do, someone is going to call you out on it and it will never work. You'll always be scared. No one will think that you should be. So you'll actually get the worst of both worlds. So, Lance, I'm going to go ahead and unmute you now, if that's okay. And, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. Are you there, buddy?
I'm here.
Cool. How you doing, man?
Hey, love you guys. Nice to hear you.
Cool, man. Good to hear you, too. I'm so glad you're on this call because there aren't too many guys that I know that have a powerful internal frame like you do. And I'm really curious as to how much of an insight your perspective of this stuff will be to those guys, you know? And first off, before I do that, do you have a question that you raised your hand for before, or are you good?
Well, I want to focus on the internal frame, but I wanted to follow up on a prior call where I provided some information on a party I held at my house.
Oh, yeah. Let's hear about that.
Yeah. Well, just to recap, I had hooked up with an old girlfriend who's an artist and pretty connected and successful. And when I met her at the reception, there were a lot of beautiful girls. And I told them I had thrown little parties at my house, and they all demanded they be invited to the next one. So I challenged them, and I said, okay, if I throw a cocktail party, will you come and bring all your girlfriends? So it ultimately ended up being like over 25 people at the party.
Nice.
And it just, it rocked.
Nice. That's a great turnout for your first party, man.
Yeah. Well, it was actually my third party. I threw one before that with just guys, and then one with girls and guys, but it was not, a cocktail party is much more glamorous, you know?
Yeah, of course.
I required all the men to wear jackets and all the girls to wear cocktail dresses.
Very cool, Lance.
We're talking, awesome. There were women at my party from age 20 to 50.
Yeah, nice.
And they were all probably 7s to 9s.
Right.
I hate to use that scale, but that's okay. A fact.
I mean, that's what we can picture that stuff, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I have a modest home in a really good neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I hired a jazz guitarist, a girl who was very hot, to play jazz guitar. I had a friend who owns a restaurant who catered at cost, and I hired a bartender.
Jesus Christ, man. Brad, I think we might be driving to Arizona for the next one of these.
Yeah,
you will like my parties. But I did it, you know, at cost, but it was glamorous, you know, the ambiance. And just before my party, that same girl, ex-girlfriend, had a party at her house, very upscale, because she's connected. And I invited half the people from her party to my party.
Wow.
So that's awesome. I'm practicing, you know, connecting, being an alpha male, and, you know, making my scene happen.
Right.
And then I actually went around the town. I was at my bank, and I just opened a new account. And the bank, the guy at the bank, my manager, is this young guy. We connected really well. He had a 25-year-old girlfriend. I invited him, and I just selectively picked people based on my gut instinct. And I created this perfect chemistry.
Oh, nothing like that, man. That's amazing.
And from that upscale party for my ex-girlfriend, that crowd came in too. And I'm not lying. It was so cool. I had a Bentley in my driveway and a $200,000 Mercedes.
Wow.
Show up at the party in the driveway, and they were like, whoa, this is a serious party, you know?
That's awesome, man. So look.
And
so
it rocked till like 2 a.m. I danced. I had a woman come up and like kiss me.
Yeah.
A woman tried to take my shirt off. And, and one woman came up to me and goes, you are the man. She said, you put this together by yourself? And I said, yeah. And like, so anyways, because of that, 2 points. One, my social confidence in creating an experience, my social IQ was pushed. And I was really nervous about the party, but I just went ahead and I did it, and it worked.
Yep.
So you have to leave your comfort zone.
Right.
So,
you had something else happen, you said?
Excuse me?
I thought you were going to say something else. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, another big benefit of the party was, it's resulted in like 2 or 3 other parties from people at the party who are putting them on.
Right, so they're inviting you to parties now.
Yes. I just got invited to another one at this upscale home with tons of beautiful women.
Yep, okay.
And
so this is funny. Do you remember when I was talking to you, because you came to the Attraction in Action course where we met for the first time?
Yeah, exactly.
And like, and I remember your response. I just want to like call this out for a second and just like talk a little about your response when I told you that this was your future. Right? Because I remember saying, the way that you're going to do this, being a super framer, you know, is, and you're a super framer, right?
Internal frame, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, with your style and what you do, if you want women to come to you, what you're going to have to do is this. And the first thing you said was, I can't change my whole life. You know?
I know, because you were talking about someone being a yoga instructor or something like that.
Right, yeah, you know, I mean, it's like, that's how it is. What you have to do is you make this a part of your life, and then all of a sudden, you have absolutely no desire whatsoever to need to chase women, because now they're chasing you, you know? And that's like the most freeing thing in the universe is to be able to do this. And this is whenever I had this experience, it was the same thing, man. I'd be at the grocery store. I'd see a hot girl in line in front of me. I'd start talking to her. And I wasn't scared because I had something to say. I was like, oh, hey, you know what? You're cool. I'm having a party at my place. A bunch of people are going to be there. You know, bring some of your friends if you want to. I don't care if they're guys or girls. Just everyone can show up. There's a mix. And, you know, it'll be at this time. Let me get your phone number. You know, and it was like I had a reason to do all of it, you know, and it just made things so much simpler for me. And I'm so glad that you rocked it so much. I mean, I was not surprised that you did. It's just like awesome that you did. And
it was like they're still talking about the party, and it was just picking the right people, and I put the bar high.
Mm-hmm.
But one more spinoff that mm-hmm. I want to share with people is that some of the really upscale guests that came to my party, there were two or three men who were very wealthy, like the guy that drove the Bentley, stuff
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like total alpha males.
Mm-hmm.
And to watch them operate at the party was great.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, I befriended two of them, and mm-hmm. I actually went to them after. I met them a few times after my party.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, will you be my mentor?
Uh-huh.
You know, and they said, yes.
What?
And I'm like, wow. I mean, I mean, these guys are like, not that this is really important, but they're like multi-millionaires, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like 68 and 70 years old. They have unlimited beautiful young women at their disposal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, will you be my mentor? So I met with one. I had lunch with him the other day, and his download about how he deals with women and money and everything was amazing.
Wow. I would love to get that information from you, and maybe we can have some kind of
I would privately share that with you, but not on the phone.
Okay. maybe I'll distill some of it into things that can be learned easily, but
yes, because, yeah. You know, this is a guy that, you know, he knows Bill Gates, okay? That's where he's at.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And Paul Allen, he talks to him regularly.
Right. Well, that's cool, man. So like, this is what's interesting. What you're using here is a concept called propinquity. And this is what I first used as well when I first got into this. It was the first concept that I used from psychology class that I took notes on. And basically what you did is you made a social environment. Instead of infiltrating one, you kind of made one yourself. And when you build one, you are automatically the center of it, and everyone else that you invite over to become part of it is now beta underneath you. So these guys who in every other aspect of their lives, they are the only alpha male. I mean, they are the one that runs everything. Instead, they walked in, they saw you, they saw what you had going on, and they respected you, and they stepped down, you know? So now they're looking at you as an equal. If you just walked up to these guys without knowing them and just asked them, there's no way that they would have done that. They would have said, yes, I'll teach you.
You're absolutely right. In fact, the one guy that I had lunch with who knows Bill Gates and Paul Allen, et cetera, he said, I don't go to parties. He goes, I'm very private. You know, mm-hmm. he lives on Camelback Mountain, you know, in a $20 million home. And he goes, I don't do that. But I really enjoyed your party, and you did a great job.
That's awesome, man. Well, we're definitely going to show up next time then. If anything, just for business.
I'm telling you, it's who you know and the right chemistry. And but for my social confidence, it was a huge experience to create that such joy for so many people. And mm-hmm. out of it, there's probably been three or four serious business deals because I picked a mix of banking, art, finance, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where people could enjoy each other's differences, but maybe connect deals.
Right. So here's a question for you on top of all that, you know, and sort of your realizations. I want to talk a little bit about your internal frame, what that means for you, because, you know, you've got this amazing gift / you know, of course, you've seen the downsides of it. Many guys haven't seen
curse.
This, you know, curse, yeah, gift yeah. and curse, right? So you've seen the parts that are the curse and the parts that are the gifts are just kind of like, well, that's just kind of who I am. It's who I always am. Let's talk a little bit about your experience whenever you walk into a place you've never been before. And you see a beautiful woman. What is your just go-to thought and response? Like, what happens within your mind or whatever whenever you experience that?
That's a great question. I kind of like if I walk into an environment and I see one I'm attracted to, I just walk up and talk to her. I just smile and say, you know, how's it going? What's your story? You know, anything I can connect her with.
Okay.
And I have no problem.
So do you have an experience for a moment where you meet eyes and you experience some kind of fear?
No, I don't have really any. I talk to anybody.
Right. Okay.
In fact, my experience with these two alpha males from my party, which I admit I was a little bit nervous because of their status is so high,
mm-hmm.
but I just said to them, hey, look, I think you're totally cool, and I want you to be my mentor. And, like, I just did it, you know, and
right.
I hardly knew them.
Right.
So,
okay, so
same with the woman, you know.
You know, the thing I'm sure that everyone's experiencing right now who's on this call who doesn't have an internal frame is just sheer awe. Right, the almost like disbelief that you have absolutely no fear around approach, you know, and this is something that I until I figured out what was at the source of all this, I felt the same way. I was like, there's no way these guys are just there's no way that they're not afraid, you know. That maybe it's just like maybe it's that they're just better looking than me, and that's why they're not scared or they got this feedback. I was trying to figure out what it was, but when I broke it all down and found out, it actually was this mechanism, this one thing. That you had, you know, this internal frame. And then, you know, let me talk a little bit, if you could talk for a second, Lance, you know, and I don't want to talk your ear off because we need to continue, but you know, talk a little bit about some of the negative points of having the internal frame and, like, what you experienced that at times you wished you had an external frame and why, you know?
Yes, that's a great point. In fact, I wrote notes and you hit on that. I had it on my list.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I can approach beautiful woman and start an attraction, but I'm not good at reading their signals.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm not. Sometimes I think I'm like autistic, you know, socially autistic. And
well,
I lose the cues. I can't read them because I'm too into my own head.
Right. Now, an extreme form of internal frame, by the way, like a very, very, very extreme form of having an internal frame is...
Like
it's called Asperger's, exactly.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and that's whenever you have complete dissociation from yourself and people around you. You know, that's Asperger's syndrome. Some people have Asperger's syndrome become sociopathic because they just don't understand that this is wrong or bad, right? They just have their stuff in their own head.
They don't have any consequence to the actions or empathy.
Right, exactly. And so I totally – you don't have Asperger's, by the way. I've taught guys that do have Asperger's. And
No, I don't.
And you have you actually have a mild internal frame. It's not like a really super strong internal frame. And the other side of that is like an extreme external frame is like another form of autism, you know, and where there's extreme social anxiety, you know, that sort of type of autistic behavior, where it's just pull into yourself and look around and constantly evaluate what everyone else is doing and not be too afraid to move and do anything, right? And that's...
No, I don't have anything remotely like that. I'm not
right.
afraid of approaching anybody.
Right. So what the what sort of happens here is... and by the way to sort of overcome that part where you have a hard time reading, which I find naturally simple to do for me, it's like not a big deal, but the other stuff I had to overcome is that you're going to... have to create a belief for yourself, Lance. That's like its own entity, its own thing that is for another purpose, and that is going to be that you are naturally curious about people, right? So you can say that you are naturally, but whenever you start to see movements, you need to start to go, "What was that about?" You know, you just did this. What does that mean? You know, and you can literally ask that question. Like, you know, when you said that, you sort of tilted your head sideways a little bit. And I'm kind of wondering, do you know why you did that? You know, and you could actually get into a conversation about body language movements, and they'll begin to reveal these qualities to you, these different patterns that you'll see, where every time you will talk to a woman, she'll tilt her head to the left, and you'll be like, oh, that's that thing. I saw that before, right? So you have to learn to read body language. I think I told you this before. It's like body language reading is going to be your jam. Like, that's going to be the thing that sets you free. You know?
Yep, you're right. You're so right.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I know that, because that's what it's all tied to. You know, you see this thing, this movement, and you have to like give yourself flashcards almost, like log it all. Log it and just go, okay, you know, they're doing this, and that means this, and therefore, they're thinking this thing, and so I'm going to now start talking about this other thing, right? Now, when you get to rapport, you're going to have an interesting combination of or a series of challenges that you've already experienced. But the most important challenge for you that you're going to overcome, for sure you're going to overcome it, is actually emoting and then feeling what they feel, empathizing, right? So this is where, you know, you can emote. I've seen you emote, so I already know that you can express your own emotions. I've seen you do that. Like, you're pretty good at that now. That's something you learn how to do. And that will get you like 90% of the way there. But the last 10% is the 10% before the finish line, you know? So like to really, you know, take it from A to Z where you got a whole package, you're ready to go, you got everything. The last 10% is going to be you empathizing with what they're saying. And the way that you do that, and this may sound kind of like silly to anyone who's got an external frame, but the way that you do that is that you picture yourself going through everything that they're saying. So if they're like, I was a kid and my dad used to hit me, and then instead of listening to what they're saying, imagine that you're a kid and your dad's hitting you, right? Like, actually go there. And then as you do that, you'll start to, you know, your breath will start to increase. You'll start to like look down a bit. You'll start to get these emotions, and you're now mimicking their emotional process. And this is called empathy, right? When they see this, they feel understood completely. And that's going to be your sort of like holy grail, you know, as you practice this and as you move forward. Does that make sense, Lance?
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I'm dating a woman now, and we were in the car, and she was telling me about her day, and she was making a real point of telling me about the ups and downs of her day, and I wasn't really open to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell she was pushing me to listen.
Right.
And I thought, okay, that's a cue. She's saying, I had this happen today, and I want you to hear me.
Right. It's not just here. It's that she wants you to feel it. Even though it's bad or something, she wants you to just for a second imagine what it's like and then go, oh, wow, that's terrible. You know, if it's bad. Or imagine what it's like and then go, oh my God, that's amazing. Right? And really, like, imagine that you're doing the thing or you're going through the thing that she's explaining. And that is the key to empathizing. That's like the, like I said, that's kind of the holy grail to empathy. You know? So.
Yeah, I think that would be the final formula for my ultimate efficiency.
Yep. I think so too. I think it's, I really, if I look at you as a whole, that's the thing that I see, that there's a tiny spot where it's like an emptiness right there that has to be improved on. That's the only thing, you know. I mean, I look at everything else. You're good. You know, once you get this, this is the thing that you should really, I mean, if you're going to improve yourself, this is the thing that's on the forefront. It's just like right there. Everything else is just like tweaking and, you know, tiny stuff. This is a big one. So, like, is there any way we can help you? Of course, obviously, let us know. And
I do, and if you want to talk privately about the gentlemen I've talked to who are, you know, super alphas, I'll be glad to share what they said.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much, Lance. Thanks for sharing that with us, man. I appreciate it, brother.
Guys, take care.
All right, Lance.
Okay, cool. So I hope that illustrates to everyone what the difference is between internal and external frame, and how most people who have external frames have sort of idealized people who have internal frames for most of our lives. And this is one of the reasons why we think that certain people are better at approach than we are, and that there's something wrong with us, when really there's nothing wrong with us and we have just a different skill set. Brad, I'm going to go ahead and look at some of these questions now that we have. Let's see. Someone just said, take the phone back to Kmart. I'm actually calling on my computer. So maybe I'll take the computer back. I'm going to go through all of these. I got lots of questions here. Okay. Brad, I want to know if you could go ahead and start reading these questions in your mind, like going over them. Start with one at the top in the Q&A section, uh-huh. And I'm going to start at the bottom. By the time I'm done with a couple, you should have that one finished. So, okay. And then I'll ask you what it's about, and then we can go from there. Phil asked a couple of questions. Let's see. Or his first statement was, there are times when I am too in my head and sort of feel apprehension. I also have a tough time feeling my tense body situations at the same time. So, like, for example, Phil, you're kind of saying, like, oh, when you start to get in your head and you get sort of nervous or scared, then your connection with your body sort of gets chopped off. And it's almost as if it's doing whatever the hell it's doing and you're in your head kind of wandering around, right, and getting scared. This is a very natural process because your body is taking cues from your brain. So whenever you have a fear approach, and you have that belief that you don't talk to everybody that you're curious about, then your body begins to react in a way that that would make that true. And when you start to do something that puts it in danger, it thinks it's in danger. So it begins to show you signals that you need to stop, like sweating palms, like quickness of breath. Like you won't even notice this, but you'll actually be on the front balls of your feet. Instead of standing on your feet flat, you'll actually be in the front of your feet because we get a position so that we can pounce and run away, right, in case we need to. And you'll lower your head, you'll try to make yourself small. All these things automatically happen. So whenever you your brain's going haywire like that, what you want to do instead of trying to control your brain is actually control your body. So you just go, okay, stand up straight, at the very least, even if I'm scared, stand up straight, look people in the eyes, you know, smile with my eyes, smile as much as I possibly can, and slow my breath down on purpose. When you do this, you'll start to free up your mind so that you can actually make a difference here and you will get better. So I understand that process because I've been through it, thousands of times before I figured out how to fix it. So the way that you want to fix it is actually to control your body, not your brain. You can't control your mind whenever it's out of whack, when you're kind of freaking out. You can't control your mind. It's gone. So instead, you want to control your body. And as soon as you do, not 5 minutes later, your mind will snap around and it'll be right back in the swing again. But if you don't control your body and you just can try to control your mind, like you're like, come on, snap out of it. All you'll do is that you'll keep freaking out more and more and more. Phil, you actually elaborated here. You said, you know, and your head bobs up and down, or you'll talk faster than the speed of comprehension. I used to do this, and the way that I found out to stop is actually if I move my hands slower when I talk, then I automatically slow down my speech. And it's crazy how fast it works. So if you're one of those fast talkers like me, where I used to have guys follow me in the bathroom when I was at a bar and ask me for Coke because they thought I was high on Coke. And I'd be like, what? No, man, what makes you think that? Like, I just didn't understand. And it's because I was nervous, and so I was talking faster, right? Some guys just do that, and I was one of those guys. So, you know, it was annoying. And when that started happening to me, I was like, man, something's really wrong with me. And I found out that if I slow my hand movements, you know, it just immediately, it slows my speech down, you know, and it will slow my breathing down too. What you want to do is have a series of body movements that you do instantly as soon as you realize that you're nervous, right? Standing up straight, breathing slowly, and starting to move your hands slower. And when you do that, your speech pattern will start to slow way down and you begin to be a lot more in control. So, so cool, Phil. I hope that helped, man. It looks like I got some positive feedback from that. Phil, if you don't have Hacking Attraction, I saw that you were asking a question about super framers. If you don't have Hacking Attraction, let me know, because that's where we go over a lot of that stuff. You should have it in your members area, at least day one, and I go over a lot of that stuff in the members area. So if you want to know more about super framers, we don't have time to talk about it here, but definitely review that. Some of my most advanced material, except for the material that I'm about to release, which you guys are going to be really excited about. So I'm not going to tease it too much, because I don't want you guys to hate me for it, but... go ahead, Brad, did you read through Chris's long-winded Long Island question?
long-winded in Long Island, says. Chris is talking about talking to a girl at work. He's a trainer, I guess, probably at a gym, and she works at the reception desk. And he says that they have a lot of playful banter, and says he may have built rapport here and there. But they have like a texting relationship basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he's invited her out a couple times, but she said she couldn't make it due to work.
What does he do from here?
Yeah, what does he do from here? He wants to avoid the friend zone. And,
okay. Brad, you know what will actually solve this is in the resources section of the Dial of Badass, will you go ahead and put up my workplace attraction training video?
Yes.
Make a note to do that. Because I made a video on this, on how to attract women at the workplace. My immediate go-to in almost every situation is to not do it at all. Because there are just too many women out there. You don't need this one girl at your work. It's going to complicate her life and it's going to make her possibly lose her job and you possibly lose your job. And then you won't be able to come to any live trainings with me and that won't be good. So I need you to have your job, and so do you. So, you know, just watch that video whenever you get, whenever it pops up there. It should be up there, you know, maybe by an hour from now or so, whenever Brad can put it up. And anytime you have a question, just reference that. The most important process, though, here is to remember that she's going to have a lot of reservations around this because she's risking a lot. So you have to take the risk away by actually being friends with her first. So you sort of force yourself into the friend zone first, and then you get out of it later on when you're hanging out in person, or just alone, you know? So it's kind of a more finesse involved in the process. So just keep that in mind. And, you know, as you watch that video, you'll kind of get more tips and techniques that I use, that I teach you on how to use to actually, to do this. Also, though, keep in mind that you still have to be kind of secretive at work, and there are a lot of negative components that can happen that you really want to pay attention to. So check that out, and hopefully it'll be very beneficial for you. I'll go over to the next question. Eddie in Los Angeles, he's asking how was New York City. It was amazing. It was amazing. Brad, you and I had such a great time there and met some amazing guys. And it was just, you know, it's actually a good time for me to say this because I've been meaning to sort of bring this up anyway. So when we were there, I tried out something that I'd never tried out before. And it ended up being a game changer for me and for Brad and for every student that came. And that is I completely changed the format of my courses, my live courses. And, you know, I wasn't going to release this information to everyone until later, but I'm going to tell you now on this call what I changed and sort of what we have in store now for the different, courses coming up so that you know what we're actually going to be doing. Normally what I would do is I would go through and teach a class, and then we'd have interspersed like field work every once in a while, and then go out, come back, and I'd recap on it. And I'd teach a long class, like it'd be like 8 hours a day of me standing in front of a whiteboard teaching you stuff. But since I built the Tao of Badass, I haven't really had to do that because you guys have already basically caught up. I mean, you're in a different, you're another level than some of the guys I used to teach because those guys were starting from scratch. You guys aren't. You're starting from another place of like really understanding a lot of information already. So what I did this time, and it was an experiment, and I thought it might be good, and it ended up just kicking ass, is I went ahead and just did field work the entire time. So we had 3 nights of field work and then 2 days of field work. So first night, we met up, you know, at 5 p.m. We had a briefing beforehand. I sort of talked about what's going to happen. We went over some major burning questions guys had, and then we went out that night. We came back the next morning, met up. I went over everything they did wrong that night, and then how to get over it, and taught them everything they needed to know. So everything was laser targeted. Then we went out and did met women during the daytime. So we all went out and did that. Came back, went over that, and then went out again that night. And then the next day, met up, went over what happened the night before. Went over the next, like, took them to the next level again. Went out and met women during the day again, and then that night did it again. Went out and met more women again at night. So what ends up happening is you get this like forced level up. So everyone who went to the class got 3 times the amount of increase in ability and their attraction with women than they would have gotten from a normal boot camp, which is already outrageous in the amount of results that they get. So I was so surprised and so kind of blown away by how effective it was that Brad and I decided to change all of our boot camp courses to become this new special format that's a lot more personalized and is a lot more elite and exclusive in the way that we develop it. So now, and I also just got off the phone with my tech guy right before this call to confirm that we could do this as well. You probably noticed that in the members area we have DAO ambassadors and we have DAO coaches, as like they're clearly labeled. Every city is going to have a DAO ambassador, so you're going to have one near you, and that guy is going to be the guy who hosts meetup groups that you can actually go to and talk to. And what we have now is a new evolution of in-field work called Black Ops exclusive in-field training. So you're actually going to go to DAO Black Ops training, and it will be this style, this format of coaching, feedback, coach feedback, coach feedback, over and over and over again while you're at the event. So really, really amazing process that happened. I was just so blown away by how effective it was. And So New York was just fantastic because of that, Eddie, so thanks for asking. But we do have one coming up in L.A. If you guys are interested, we have, I think, 2 spots left. If you want it, we usually offer these to Founding Member Club members first. We already offered it to a couple people in, and they already grabbed up the first few spots that were available. I think we have 2 spots left, so if you do...
Only be one, actually.
Oh, really? Well, okay, so if you if they took it from earlier today, if there's only one left, then just go ahead. If you're online right now and you have in the Q&A box, put your email and your phone number and your name just in the Q&A box. If you aren't in the Q&A box, go ahead and email brad@thedowofbadass.com and tell them in subject line, just write LA Bootcamp or LA Black Ops, actually, since now it's Black Ops stuff. And we will, and then in the body, write your name, email, and you'll have your email. So do your name and your phone number. And we'll call you immediately. Maybe might even call you after this call here to try to see if I can, we can get you in before it fills up, because we have, you know, it fills up quick. But either way, I'm not trying to pitch anything to you right now. I'm just kind of wanted to let you guys know before it runs out and we fill up spaces. But I had a great time at that. It was just like, you know, there were some moments in that where, like, you know, I don't know, guys, I had a lot of guys who are kind of hesitant to believe that when you come to a course like this, you become my friend, you know? And I know that, who was it that didn't believe it last time? Franklin, right? He was like,
yeah,
you know,
I wish Franklin were on the call right now.
yeah, because he went to the course. I mean, he was there.
Yeah.
But in January, we do have that event coming up. If you do want to be a part of it, go ahead and grab it. But I mean, we just shared so many awesome experiences with each other. It's like by the end of it, you feel like, you know, I feel like I've known these guys for 10 years, and it's just really cool. So, anyway, if you can make it, awesome. I'd love to meet you, especially if you're in the LA, San Francisco area, or San Diego area. Or even if you're out in Arizona, something maybe a few hours drive away or so.
I mean, then LA is a pretty huge
hub. It's so giant,
it'd be
pretty
easy for anybody to get to.
Yeah, exactly. So if you guys can do it, then let us know. Next, let me see.
Kevin has his hand up on the phone.
Oh, okay. You want to go ahead and unmute him real quick?
Hello, hey, Kevin, you there?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. What's going on, man?
Nothing. I just had a quick question about a situation that happened last weekend. I seen this girl at the bar, and I kind of did like a drive-by awesome guy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just said, hey, what's up real quick, and then ran off to the bathroom.
Right.
And then I came back later, and I asked her to dance, and we went on the dance floor, and things got very sexual very quickly. Like, she started grabbing the back of my hair, and, mm-hmm. Like, just very sexually escalated very quickly. And mm-hmm. then her friends kind of noticed and got her away to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to leave then after that. So I isolated her, and I started to build a little rapport, got a phone number. And I was wondering if that was the right thing to do. Should I have just maybe tried to escalate it more once I isolated her, or was building rapport the right thing to do?
No, that was absolutely the right thing to do. That was perfect. And you played that very well. And the reason why is because, first off, the reason why you had such a immediate sexual process is because you went from high value to touch, high touch, like really quick. And that escalated the sexual attraction. In her mind, she was in her own world. And that's why her friends took her to the bathroom, right? Because they had to save her because she was about to sleep with you. So that's what happened. So just so you know, just so you're
awesome.
Aware of that. Whenever you do that, you know, if you see this, like, her friends are kind of like running interference for her, like stealing her away and stuff, and that's okay because that's what her friends are for. What you didn't do, if you wanted that to sort of work better, you should have seen that she was with friends first, addressed the group for a bit, just for a second, and made a few jokes and won them over a little bit, and then asked her to dance. If you did that, then her friends wouldn't have pulled you away. You know?
Okay. Yeah, so I was kind of like just a random guy that she danced with then at that point to them.
Exactly. And they didn't want her to, like, you know, girls are really interesting. Like, it's not just that they don't want her to look like a slut. It's that they want what she's doing, and it's not fair to. So they'll pull her.
Honestly, they were both kind of like starting to dance with me too a little bit, and I had to like nudge them out of the way for her because, like, I could tell they were all getting jealous.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's like, you know, they'd rather stick together. So what you have to do is attract all of them at once, right? And then integrate with the group, as in, like, look at them all in the eyes while you're talking, like, joke around and stuff, and be that sexual guy. This is the kind of thing that, by the end of the night, if you had integrated, it's very likely, like, if you had integrated with them and then showed them all the same amount of touch and attraction, it's very likely you would have had a threesome or more by the end of the night, because that's how they start off, You know, they start off with this like group attraction process, and then you play off the jealousy toward each other, and then they gets heightened more and more and more and more, and then eventually it's gone. You know, I mean, it's the end of it. You don't have to do anything. So you did the right thing. You definitely want to build rapport at that point. But more than anything, you have to integrate with a group too. Like she, I'm not sure if she'll answer the phone or not. Like, I'm not sure if you tried that yet. Like ping her.
Yeah, she's being kind of distant with the phone. Like she answered to a couple of texts, and like I followed the texting guide and whatnot. But cool. She's being pretty distant about it.
Yeah. So what's happening is she feels bad, like for you know, so it's my girlfriend. For a long time, probably about until about 2 years ago. Felt bad for taking the spotlight because her friends would get jealous whenever she would always be the girl to get the guy because she's really attractive. So her friends would get really upset. So she felt really crappy for that. So she would always play it down, you know, and like she just like would always be the one to like split or something and not be there and like, okay, well, I can't do this and whatever, you know, and she would turn guys down a lot. And it wasn't because she wasn't attracted to them. It was just because she couldn't do it because her friends would hate her for it. And now like, you know, it becomes more about becoming a guy who can, you know, attract a girl and then integrate with a group, you know, like be like that social hub or social ambassador, make everybody feel like they have value and then isolate. After that,
okay,
you won't have
like
any problem. You know?
The psychological space thing I should probably go over then, right?
Yeah, totally. That'll absolutely help. You know, it sounds like you're using a lot of the concepts already. I mean, the drive-by awesome guy is like, it's just an amazing technique. One of my favorite techniques to use.
Yeah, it was almost too easy. Yeah. It was just like bam, snap of the fingers.
Yeah, exactly. And it's designed specifically for that, like to build a really intense, quick attraction and then take it all away and then come back later and have all that be like urgent to her, you know? One thing you probably could have done is as soon as she started getting sexual with you, you probably could have isolated with her immediately. Like, as soon as she started dancing with you, spin around, and then just walk off with her and get to a part of the bar or club, wherever, where her friends aren't, and just start making out with her. Because that would have happened if you did that. I mean, there's a lot of the times that I would actually go to the bathroom with a girl and have sex with her in the bathroom happened like that. It was like, I came up, did a drive-by, and then came back, just built sexual attraction really quickly, and then isolated fast and left. You know, and that was really fun. But whenever you do that, you run the risk of having her friends pull her away. So you have to keep that in mind. If you do see that she has friends, sometimes you have to play a little bit longer game, you know, and take your time with it. And then you also run the risk of her not responding the next day or, you know, not answering your phone calls because you didn't build any rapport. So the best thing to do is to build rapport and to play a little bit longer game and not be in a big hurry. So like what you did was actually the right thing to do. Now what you're going to have to do is integrate with her friends before you can really hook up with her again. So you're going to be really playful and stuff, and then you're going to want to really, every time you want to hang out with her, you're going to want to invite her and her friends, right? And if you remember their names, then say their names, you know?
Okay.
And be like, hey, if you and so-and-so and so-and-so are not doing anything tomorrow, I'm going to be over here with a couple of my friends. You guys should come out and meet us, you know?
Yeah, that's what I did. I said, we're going to be at this place on Saturday at this time. I'm meeting a few people. You know, if you want to, you know, dress cute and have fun and be there.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. If you just invited her, now she's leaving her friendship group again and she's going to feel like shit, right? So you have to invite her and her friends, even if her friends aren't really that good looking, you know?
Oh, they were.
Okay, like, great. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so your friends are going to love you for it anyway. You know? Oh, really?
Yeah, the girl I was dancing with, her name was Ashley and her sister Sam was there.
Hmm.
And like they were both dancing with me. It was insane.
That didn't sound too bad. So what you're trying to say is that this stuff doesn't work.
Yeah, it definitely works. I did the twirl.
Yep.
You know, the grab her hand, pull it across your body. It mm-hmm. worked amazing.
Yeah, that's the washing machine of bad attitudes. I know that.
Yes, it is.
Okay, cool, man.
By the way, Kevin, are you in Michigan?
He's Lansing.
Lansing, actually the less popular in Illinois, south side of Chicago.
Oh.
Brad was in Michigan forever, so
that's
like,
cool too.
Hearing your accent and going, ah, oh, I'm so homesick.
Yeah. I don't know if you could tell the Chicago accent with the accented
yeah.
A, so.
Yeah, I'm just expecting you to say, don't you know, at the end of everything.
Dub Bears.
Cool, Dub Bears. Cool, Kevin. Thanks so much, man. Yeah, if you, I'd like to hear about what happens with this, if it happens again, or, you know, the progress in the next call in a couple of weeks. to see if we can we can help you get past it and everything too. So definitely keep us informed. Okay, man.
Yeah, no problem. I'll keep you updated. Thanks for everything, man. Appreciate
it. Yeah, no problem, man. It's my job. It's what I do.
All right.
All right. I'll talk to you soon, brother.
Yep. Thanks. See ya.
Mm-hmm. Bye. All right. So that's all we have time for today. I just got over as many questions as I possibly could. There's a couple. Oh man, Jonathan, you asked a couple of questions last minute. Why don't Brad? Can you copy all these questions?
Yeah.
In the Q&A section that are left, and then we'll try to get to these, Jonathan, in the next call. Sorry that I couldn't get to them in time. And you as well, Eddie. I know you guys have a lot of good questions, but we already went 45 minutes over, so I got to call it. But look, guys, you're my boys. Absolutely a pleasure to talk to you, and a pleasure to have you guys on this call and to be able to help you out. Next call, we're going to be going a lot deeper into approach anxiety and how to get over it. If you do want to be a part of the LA Black Ops program, then Black Ops training program, email brad@dialbadass.com right now and let them know give them your name and your phone number, and we'll give you a call and see if we can give you more information about it, so you know what actually is going to be happening, so you're not blindsided by anything. Brad, thanks so much for hanging out, brother.
My pleasure, man.
And I will see you guys in a couple of weeks. Thanks so much, man.